This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Medical marijuana has arrived in Ohio. 5 medical marijuana dispensaries are now open in the state. Sales in the first 2 weeks topped $500,000. But the price of an ounce of medicinal cannabis in Ohio is higher than the national average. Here to break down the early days of medical cannabis in Ohio, our Cincinnati Inquirer business reporter, Randy Tucker, who's here in the studio. Welcome, Randy.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me.
And Cresco Labs Chief Communications Officer Jason Erkes joins us on the phone. Cresco Labs is a medical marijuana and adult use marijuana company based in Chicago. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me.
If you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or check us out on Facebook or Twitter, where we will see your comments or your tweets. Jason, let's start with you. Cresco is now operating in 6 states. What does that mean exactly? What does your company do?
We are a seed-to-sale integrated medical cannabis company and adult-use cannabis company. So we grow our product in those states. We have a complete branded suite of products that we manufacture, and in many states we own dispensaries as well. So we're kind of a seed-to-sale business, meaning we do everything in the supply chain from manufacturing, processing, our own product line, and then we sell directly to the consumers or patients in those markets.
Jason, your company notes that it works in both the medical marijuana and adult use segments. What's the difference there in terms of what product you make available in the states that have different access available to patients and users?
Sure, the products are very similar, but states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois that are regulated medical cannabis programs we're in, but then we're also in states like California and Nevada, where it's an adult use program where people can, you don't need to register with your doctor or have approval to go in and buy the products.
Randy, medicinal cannabis is now here in Ohio. So what are we learning here in the early days as patients now have access to it?
Well, it's going to be more expensive than what you could buy on the street. This is just based on unnamed sources that I've consulted with, recently. I think early on, the first buyers are paying about $50 an ounce for medical marijuana, and $50 for about a tenth of an ounce, or about $500 for an ounce, and compared to some other states like Colorado, where it's legal for medical and recreational use, that's about $300 higher than what an ounce is selling for there. And then in the black market, people say you can buy it for $10 a gram.
And of course, on the black market, you might not necessarily know where it's from, but I guess in the dispensaries that are available to patients in Ohio, there's a little more regulation about the origin and what's inside.
And Jason will attest to this. So that's why the prices are higher, because there's just a lot more quality control that goes into producing the product that is sold in the licensed dispensaries here. And in addition to the fact that, again, Jason will tell you that the producers and growers and the dispensaries have to pay some extraordinarily high fees to put it on the shelves and sell it to medical marijuana cardholders.
So tell us, Jason, what is the difference?
I hate it when someone else takes my lines. Thanks, Randy.
Randy's interviewed you a few times, so
looking out for you.
Yeah, Randy and I have talked many times. Well, he's right. Ohio is a regulated program, so there's a lot of additional costs that go in every step of the way, including third-party testing from both a potency and a purity standpoint and a dosage standpoint. So, patients are assured what they're getting when they buy something at one of the licensed dispensaries in the state of Ohio. And that's a big difference between that and the black market. But I can tell you that the pricing in Ohio is in line with other regulated markets like Illinois and Pennsylvania right next door, where I think the average price is somewhere, $17, $18 a gram in Ohio right now, and it's around $16 to $19 a gram right next door in Pennsylvania. So the prices are very close, and what you see in a lot of these regulated programs is the prices are a little higher when the program first starts, but as more dispensaries and more product becomes available online, as more cultivators are have product to distribute, those prices will self-regulate in the industry and will come down a little bit.
And the marijuana that's available at these dispensaries in Ohio and really in other states, is this marijuana that has to be grown in this state and those states? Do they have to be specific to those states?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is siloed in every market in the country. I mean, it has to be grown, manufactured, processed, seed to sale in that state. Nothing can cross state lines because it's still federally illegal, which also means, we get a lot of calls from patients that are across the border in Pennsylvania or West Virginia, because our dispensary in Wintersville is right over the border, and that means we can't service them as well because it's illegal for them to bring the product back over the state line. So everything in Ohio is started in Ohio and ends in Ohio.
So, Jason, what can that tell us about the quality of the product from state to state? I mean, is the soil an impact? Is the environment an impact on the type of marijuana that's available to patients?
Well, you know, the facilities that are growing medical cannabis in Ohio, it's a controlled environment. So everything is regulated and it's tested and mandated. So products can be assured that what they're buying at the dispensaries is the highest quality product that they can get. It's going through a third-party testing process in Ohio where it's being tested for, you know, contaminants and for purity and for potency and for all those things. So, I mean, the facilities are all indoors and it's a controlled environment. So it's very, very regulated. And I would say probably some of the highest quality product you can buy anywhere in the country.
So it's not unusual prior to this legalization and access to medicinal marijuana or even recreational in some states for employers to test prospective employees or even ongoing employees for use of marijuana. Is that changing now? Randy, what are you finding that companies are doing in terms of testing for marijuana use as it now becomes legally, medicinally here in Ohio?
Maybe surprisingly, some companies have actually discontinued testing, not just because of marijuana, but, you know, we have an opioid epidemic here in the state, and it's hard to find workers to fill a lot of positions in factories, and some of the smaller mom and pop shops have just stopped testing because they know a lot of their applicants can't pass a drug test, and instead they've offered to help those employees they have struggling with drug addiction, et cetera, to get help and counseling.
Is that something you're finding too, Jason?
Yeah, I can't speak to what kind of testing we do, you know, from a human resources or a hiring standpoint, but, you know, I can agree with Randy about the opioid problem, but a lot of patients in Ohio are turning to cannabis, medical cannabis, to help get off opioids. And, you know, that's a lot of what we're seeing at our dispensary there in Wintersville at our CY Plus dispensary is we're having people that are suffering from chronic pain with a number of the symptoms for the 21 conditions in the state that are trying to wean their way off of opioids, as Randy brought up.
I'd like to, you know, I don't think opioids have been approved as one of the conditions, though, that qualifies you for medical marijuana treatment yet, even though that's under consideration.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the additional considerations that are coming up, or at least being weighed in Ohio, in our next segment. First, you're listening to Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, we are talking about medical marijuana today. Joining me are Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Randy Tucker and Cresco Labs Chief Communications Officer Jason Erkes. If you want to weigh in on this conversation, please give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We're monitoring comments and replies there and may get some on the air. Randy, you wrote a story a little while ago, and it noted that the legal marijuana industry is expected to generate $35 billion in sales by 2020. That's more than double the revenue from the National Football League. I know some of us are still thinking about the Super Bowl from Sunday for a variety of reasons. Are you still seeing those types of figures as you report on this? Do those numbers look accurate?
Well, there are a few industry publications that track the numbers. I'm not, you know, the numbers vary, but definitely in the hundreds of billions of dollars nationwide, and sales are expected in states that have both recreational and medical marijuana legalization. Sales are going to be more limited in Ohio since it's restricted to medical marijuana, and I think I had one analyst tell me that they expected to see sales of about $300 million here over the next 5 years or so.
And how are sales going so far in these early days in Ohio? Do you know anything about that yet, Randy?
I'm not sure what the totals are, but I know more dispensaries have opened, so I'm sure sales are up. And as more dispensaries open and more product becomes available, I'm sure you'll see prices start to decline. It typically happens in any industry. I'm sure it'll happen here. I think I did see a figure where the Medical Marijuana Control Program issued a statement saying that average prices had declined from about $500 an ounce to around $450 or $430 an ounce.
Jason, as far as marijuana tourism goes. What are you seeing in other states that have only medicinal cannabis available? Is it a boon to tourism in states where full recreational use is legal, but not so much in the ones that only have medical access?
Listen, I think it speaks to the popularity interest in this plant, right? Whether from a medical standpoint, if people are going and trying to take advantage of the medicinal qualities of it, as we're seeing those numbers go up state after state. And sure, sales in states like California and Nevada and states that have adult use programs, it's certainly something that when people are going to those markets from a state where it's not legal, they want to be able to experience. It's something unique and something you can do. But I think overall, it speaks to the acceptance of cannabis as medicine and as something that, you know, should be legalized. People are taking advantage of it in, you know, over 30 states across the country. And when you see people line up outside a dispensary, as we did on opening day there in Wintersville, it speaks to the interest and the alternative that people are looking for prescription medications and to deal with the symptoms that they have from their conditions.
So Kentucky is also considering medical marijuana as lawmakers meet in Frankfurt this month. Jason, does your company or the industry in general involve itself in lobbying during these debates? What does that look like?
Sure. I mean, there's a number of groups that are involved in lobbying and making sure that legislators that are considering enacting a program like this have all the information they need, where they can hear from patients and hear from doctors and look at medical research and things like that. I can't say that we're involved in that conversation right now in Kentucky, but I guarantee you other people are. The whole industry right now, because it's still so new and evolving at such a rapid pace, there's a lot of education that needs to happen. And it's education for doctors and education for regulators and legislators and education for patients so they understand, how this plant can help them and help the conditions that they have.
Jason, one concern I heard from a Kentucky lawmaker opposed to the current bill being considered there is that medical marijuana is not scrutinized as strongly as other medicines that require an FDA approval process. What's your response to that?
That's absolutely true. I mean, more research needs to be done, but more research can't be done until the federal government loosens the reins and the FDA can get involved in doing it. There's a lot of independent research that's been done and studies that have been done, and that's what everyone is relying on. But we fully support the FDA getting involved and looking at it and understanding it. But I can speak firsthand and tell you when I'm at one of our dispensaries and I'm standing in line talking to people that are coming there to make a purchase, and I hear their stories and their conditions, this plant helps them. It's life-changing for some people. People that have, chronic pain and are on opioids and they can't function and their stomach doesn't work right and they have sleeping issues, or people that are suffering from PTSD. So, from a clinical research standpoint, there might not be enough because the FDA doesn't support it. But, from a firsthand standpoint, I think everyone knows someone that has a story where this plant has helped them with their condition.
Jason Urquhart is the Chief Communications Officer at Chicago-based Cresco Labs. Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today about medical marijuana. It's now available in Ohio. Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Randy Tucker is here in the studio. He has covered this topic extensively. Thanks for sticking around, Randy.
Sure.
And now joining us on the phone is Medical Director at Ohio Marijuana Card, Dr. Timothy Thress. Doctor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. If you would like to join in on the discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. We'll see your comments and tweets there. Dr. Thress, you spent 30 years in the delivery room. One report said you delivered 4,000 babies, and then you decided to move your practice into the medical cannabis business. Why?
Well, kind of a long story, but I had a private practice for a while and had to sell it to a larger corporation. And after about 4 or 5 years, that wasn't working out. And I was kind of burnt out on the medical records, electronic medical records, and some other issues. And so I think I don't know if it was a God thing or what, but I went from the miracle of birth to the miracle of this plant. And I get to see how I can affect people on a daily basis that are in need of more help than the medical system is able to give them at this point.
You call marijuana a miracle plant. Tell us about why.
Well, it does. I mean, it does everything from anti-cancer to antibacterial to anti epilepsy, anti-emetic, anti-inflammatory. I mean, it affects almost every system in the body, and it works in a different way versus most of our medicines kind of tear down the body or try to fix it in a certain way. But with medical cannabis, it actually uses the body to heal itself and bring balance back to the body, especially like inflammatory states or other chronic illnesses.
Randy, there are 21 conditions currently for patients to gain access to medical cannabis. They include HIV and AIDS, cancer, multiple sclerosis, others like Tourette's syndrome. Can you tell us anything about the process that the state undertook to determine which ones would qualify?
Well, they looked at a list of suggestions submitted by doctors and health groups across the state. And they also allowed themselves to consider other conditions, including opioid dependence, and add those to the list. So 21 is not a static number. And in fact, the state is considering other conditions now as we speak. And so it's likely that the number of conditions that qualify for medical marijuana treatment will be expanded in the near future.
That's right. You mentioned opioid use disorder as one of the six additional conditions under consideration, along with general and chronic anxiety, insomnia, depression, and autism. Dr. Thress, do you support adding those conditions to the list?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of evidence-based medicine for these. And most of the time when people are suffering and they're in pain, it's usually a combination of pain, chronic pain, depression, and anxiety, and cannabis kind of pulls that apart and helps in all those areas. And so, I mean, we're essentially helping people with depression and anxiety, but they usually have another one of the diagnoses in addition to that.
We got a call from a listener named Seth. He goes to an opioid pain clinic. And he wants to know, will there be a time when he can go to the opioid pain clinic and supplement with marijuana? Dr. Thress, that might be a better question for you.
Yeah, there's certain pain clinics that are against any type of the THC in the urine. And then there's other ones that they'll work with you. I was involved in a pain clinic, and they were absolutely very emphatic about the any type of THC they would not tolerate. The CDC guidelines for opioid use is they're not even supposed to check for THC. They're only supposed to be checked for things that can cause overdose and kill the patient. So in a sense, they're not supposed to be. The CDC says they shouldn't even be checking for THC, but I think over time we're going to get some pain clinics that we can work with, because, you know, I can decrease their opioid use, which is actually one of the goals of pain clinics, is to use non-opioid forms of treatment. And medical cannabis is a non-opioid form of treatment.
We talked to one of the first patients of medical marijuana here in the state. Her name is Joni. Here's what she told us.
Sleep. I'm sleeping so much better. I'm telling you, I haven't had a good night's sleep probably in 15 years. And since I've been able to get a hold of Indica, I'm sleeping so much better.
Dr. Thress, I'm assuming that's probably some common feedback to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we go over the insomnia. Most people that are in pain, if you're in pain, it's hard to sleep. It's hard to get comfortable. So we encourage indica strands at night and maybe an edible, because those are both involved in, we call it restorative sleep versus like a sleep that you get with Ambien or Trazodone, where you wake up the next morning feeling not so great. It's a different experience, and these people, they're basically just want to feel normal. And to get a normal night's sleep is so foreign to some people, and when they actually get it, it's like a miracle.
We got a couple of emails, one from Hans. He says, I'm very confused why Ohio seems to be attempting to reinvent the wheel with our medical marijuana program. The Western states model has stable supply, low prices, and years of evidence of functioning well, yet we seem to have chosen to do things our own way for no reason. With Michigan going full recreational too, it just seems that, again, Ohio is seriously behind the times. We got an email from Greg. He says he's trying to get his mother on. She's been in nursing home for 3 years and has terrible back pains. The opioids hurt her stomach, hoping to find a solution. We've got a couple of minutes. Take a quick call from Brian. Brian, you are joining us here on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. What's your question?
Yes, I was just wondering, with the limited studies that have actually been done definitively, how confident can we say that marijuana does provide a good treatment for mental health conditions?
Thank you, Brian. Dr. Thress, medical marijuana for mental health, your thoughts?
Well, I see a lot of patients that have used it, and they give you testimonies. And I think there's a lot of evidence as far as PTSD and insomnia go. I don't have the studies in front of me as far as anxiety and depression, but I know for a fact that when you use medical cannabis, it kind of pulls you into the present moment. So there's a lot of less anxiety, and there's a lot of endocannabinoid stimulation of dopamine and norepinephrine, and it changes the body. It puts them into a rest, relax, and digest phase versus a fight, flight, or freeze phase. And all the testimonies that I get and give me some proof and some evidence-based medicine that it will help with a lot of these issues as far as, depression and anxiety and insomnia.
We have just about a minute left. Randy, I want to ask you, there's a bill in the Kentucky General Assembly that would legalize medical cannabis in that state. Are there any lessons that you think Kentucky could learn from Ohio from your perch as a reporter?
Well, I think most states that are adopting new medical marijuana or any kind of new legalized marijuana regulations look at other states that have done it. And I don't know if Kentucky will model its, would model its program after Ohio's or some other state that might be a little less restrictive. But I agree with the previous caller that I think you can be a little more lenient and still roll out a quality controlled program, but maybe get the product to people a little faster.
And Dr. Thress, in about 10 or 15 seconds, your thoughts on what Kentucky can learn from Ohio?
Well, I think everybody can learn everything from all the other states as well as Ohio. Like the guy said, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. People want to do it the right way, and there's always some sort of something that wasn't met or something that somebody wants to do differently. So, right, like the other caller said, I really do think we could learn a lot from the previous states.
Dr. Thress and Randy, thanks for joining us today. Up next, we'll talk about that Kentucky legislation. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A bill in the Kentucky General Assembly would make medical marijuana available in the Bluegrass State, but two local lawmakers from the same party disagree on how it should move forward. Joining me now are a pair of Republican state representatives from Northern Kentucky. Diane St. Onge is from Fort Wright and is a co-sponsor of a bill in Frankfort that would legalize medical marijuana in the state. Kim Mosier is from Taylor Mill and is the former director of the Northern Kentucky Office of Drug Control Policy. She supports a bill that would urge the federal government to expedite research on medical marijuana prior to supporting its legalization in Kentucky. Welcome to you both. Before we dive into questions about the legislation, Cincinnati Edition spoke earlier with a Kentucky man who suffers from multiple sclerosis and supports this legislation because he says marijuana brings him relief. Let's listen to Jaime Montalvo.
I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis back in 2007. And since that time, 6 months afterwards, I was on no less than 12 different pills a day. At one time, I was given chemotherapy. So to me, cannabis was the alternative for pain relief, nausea relief, symptom relief in the sense of multiple sclerosis, which is muscle spasms, trouble concentrating, lack of sleep. Cannabis helped me cope with all of those different symptoms.
So that's not an unusual perspective from someone who's suffering from chronic pain and has used marijuana as some form of medicine. So let's start with the basics. Representative St. Ange, what motivated you to bring this legislation forward?
We have approximately 40 to 60,000 Kentuckians who are suffering from one debilitating disease or another, symptoms from that. Some who have sought traditional medical treatment, and they're not being relieved from that. Their quality of life has diminished considerably. They're just not being able to function properly, and this gives them some relief from excruciating pain.
We'll come back to that while you freshen up there. Representative Mosier, you say the state needs more time to understand the full impact of this legislation.
Well, right. I'm not unsympathetic to individuals who have debilitating diseases, number one. And I do think that Kentucky, given that we haven't legalized anything yet, we have a real opportunity to do this right. And I would absolutely support things like the federal lifting the Schedule I designation, I guess, of marijuana on a federal level to allow more research. So that's really what I am in favor of. I am always going to come down on the side of science. And, if we can show that there are medicinal qualities in THC, and I'm sure there are because we're finding that there are in CBDs, that, we can find a product that can be accurately dosed and accurately indicated for specific diseases.
So Kentucky has long been associated with cannabis in one way or another. The botanical genus of marijuana, of course, is cannabis. It's often referred to as the state's number one cash crop. Of course, there's not really any hard evidence to support that, but that's been sort of a colloquialism in the bluegrass state, certainly for a long time. But in a Kentucky Health News article from December, in which you were quoted, Representative Mosier, marijuana prevention enhancement sites, Diane McFarland said, Kentucky has been a top five domestic producer of marijuana for the past 5 years, and that there's enough cannabis in the state to produce 239 joints for every man, woman, and child in Kentucky. She said, quote, that's a lot of marijuana being grown in a state where we have no legalization. So I want the perspective of each of you on the economic impact potential of marijuana in Kentucky, whether legalized for medicine or recreation, if that's a consideration for you as well.
So first, let me be perfectly clear. This is a bill to legalize medicinal marijuana. It is not a recreational marijuana. I am not for legalizing recreational marijuana. Neither is Representative Nemus, who is the co-sponsor with me. And our primary motivation, as I said a little bit earlier, is to help these folks who are taking 30 plus pills a day, who cannot function, and it is to help them relieve their pain. It is not necessarily a revenue generator. That's not how we are approaching it. If the businesses that come up through this, under this very highly regulated, licensed framework that we have this, if they do well, great. But this is not, the purpose is not, it's not the panacea for our budget shortfalls at all.
Representative Mosier?
Yes. I agree that this would not be a revenue generator because we currently don't tax pharmaceuticals. And so, to tax this and call it a revenue generator, I think that we'd have to take a very difficult look at how we deal with other pharmaceuticals, and I don't think any of us want to do that. The other piece of this whole economic puzzle, there are a few things. the way the bill is written, it allows home grow. And I have spoken to Kentucky State Police. I've talked to numerous folks who would be tasked with enforcing and regulating this, and they just don't see how that's possible. I see it as a potential cost to our state to do this. We also, again, we are in a position to look at what other states are doing. And so right now, we're seeing things like California looking to roll back their taxes on their marijuana. Now it's recreational, but they overshot and overestimated the amount of revenue that it would generate. And additionally, their tax on, I guess, the dispensaries or the folks who are legitimately producing marijuana is it's really being undercut by the black market right now. And so they can't compete. So they're looking at having to roll back their taxes, which means they are going to lose money regulating. So this is, you know, I think that we have a real opportunity to look at the 33 states that have done something in terms of legalization and really hone in on what works, what doesn't. We're going to look at the pros and the cons, you know, just come up with something that is more tightly regulated.
And I want clarification so that I understand better and so that the listeners understand. When you say we don't tax medicines, mm-hmm. that would be no tax at the point of purchase. Is that right?
Yes.
But in the production of the medicine, the companies or whoever cultivates it and creates it, they're taxed.
Sure, but that's not necessarily – those aren't necessarily Kentucky manufacturers or companies. You know, we're not necessarily reaping the benefit of those taxes.
Well, these would actually be Kentucky companies because they would need to be in Kentucky to have one of the four different licenses that would be required as either your cultivator, your processor, your dispensary, and the entirely separate safety compliance company. And there we have specifically outlined in the bill what the requirements are to be on the board, to own, to work, to volunteer in those places. There are some very specific requirements on that. And it's interesting you did bring that up. We are actually, as of about 4 or 5 days ago, we're taking a look at the tax structure. Excise tax versus sales tax is the distinction that really needs to be made there. And we are, as anyone knows who's worked in the legislature, a bill goes through many, many iterations. This already has, you know, I can't tell you how many lives. We make adjustments accordingly and have asked for input from everyone, people who oppose it. What do you think would make this better? And, you know, one of the suggestions was on the taxes to take a look at that. We have actually provided in the bill for our indigent people who meet the federal poverty guidelines to have a break, so to speak, in purchasing this from a dispensary. Some of the money that would be gathered from either the excise tax or sales tax, whichever way we finally work that, is being set aside for those people specifically to help out with that. And I would go to the point that Representative Mosher, and she's my friend, so I may break into saying Kim, says on this, the 33 other states and, yes, the UK, Canada, Israel, a number of Western nations are on board with doing this in their areas. If we look at extrapolate those states that are have recreational marijuana from the list who has medical marijuana. So there are 33 states. 7 of those 33 also have recreational marijuana. The others are just solely medicinal. And in medicinal, they have shown in studies that there is a decrease in traffic fatalities. There's a decrease in the criminal drug trafficking within that state. And there are certainly very many benefits from doing that in the state that have been reported. I mean, and as recently, and take a look at my note here, that we have an article from a gentleman associated, I believe it was a gentleman associated with University of Kentucky, that that opioid prescriptions actually do drop in the states that have medicinal marijuana. Opioids kill. Marijuana has never killed anyone.
I saw you shaking your head, Representative Mosher. You want to respond to that?
Sure. You know, I'm one of those people who reads the Rocky Mountain HIDA report and looks at the Western states who were really the original legalizers, if you will, of marijuana, either medically or recreationally. And it really has not borne out those traffic statistics. Fatalities are actually up. And, you know, it's a combination of drugs, but marijuana is always there. So, you know, I think, again, that's just one example of why we need to really take a slow approach to what we're doing here. You know, the anecdotal evidence that opioid use disorders are somehow treated by use of marijuana, I don't really buy that. I don't think that introducing yet another substance as a coping mechanism is really what we should be teaching our kids. But again, you know, if this is medicine, let's follow the process that we have. We have an FDA approval process. It requires research. And I think I know why the advocates want to treat this plant differently than any other plant that becomes a medicine. But I think the argument for medicine, calling it a medicine, is to kind of normalize the whole notion and recreationalize it.
So if I could just speak to that for 1 second. There was a 2017 out here in Kentucky out of the Office of Drug Control Policy, which said that 4 out of 5 people who take heroin now started with opioid prescriptions to opioids.
And marijuana. You're right.
4 out of 5 people who use heroin now started with prescription opioids. And in from out of University of Kentucky, out of JAMA, the very well-renowned journal, as I know you're very familiar with, they said that in those states where there have been medical marijuana legalized, where that has been legalized, there is a drop in the opioid prescription. So if you look at that, if there's a drop in the prescription, and then there would be less people that would be taking heroin because they're not, you know, being overprescribed or are addicted to opioids, and there is a chain there. And anecdotal evidence there. So there are phase 3 studies. We have been asked by our Senate actually for phase 3 studies. We have provided phase 3 studies for treating certain types of symptoms, such as for chemotherapy, the nausea, the lack of appetite, for pain relief. Statistically significant studies that have shown that marijuana use for treating pain is a fact, and that those are our phase 3 studies. Also, for someone mentioned, I guess it was Jaime at Montalvo, multiple sclerosis. So for the specificity, it helps for that. Crohn's disease. Now there are others that you need more tests, but when you have tens of thousands of studies, anecdotal evidence that people are saying, "Hey, this works," you know, there's something there. And we need to give this relief to these people who can't get it otherwise.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Today we're talking with two Republican state representatives about medical marijuana legislation in Frankfort. Joining me are Representative Diane St. Ange of Fort Wright. She's a co-sponsor of a bill to legalize medical marijuana in Kentucky, and Representative Kim Mosier of Taylor Mill. She's calling for expedited federal research on medical marijuana before that bill is made law in Kentucky. And Representative Mosier, on this same theme that we're discussing now in terms of the medical marijuana discussion, delaying medical marijuana legislation for further research as we do with other drugs, which is something you support, Representative mm-hmm. Mosier, the heroin crisis is often described as having started with the overprescription of legally prescribed drugs. Is that an indicator that even with more research, even with federal due diligence, we don't have a fail-proof system here?
Well, we definitely don't have a fail-proof system. And we also have many different entry points into the heroin use disorder and the problem that we see now. I don't talk to very many heroin users or folks in recovery who didn't start with cigarettes, drinking, marijuana. It's a drug that positions you badly. And so, if we normalize substance use, we actually scientifically, it's been shown that you change your brain and you reduce inhibitions and all of that. So, I'm not necessarily saying that Reefer Madness is a place that we should go back to. I think that there are medicinal qualities in THC, and we just need to find out what they are.
So you're both Republicans. Mm-hmm. You're both Republican members of the State House in Kentucky, and your party took control of that chamber in the 2016 election for the first time in like a century, right? Mm-hmm. And with that control, then you had both chambers. So you had the whole General Assembly and the governor's office for the first time. With that control, Republicans pushed and passed legislation that became law related to so-called right to work, repealing prevailing wage in the state of Kentucky. And often Republican members in the House said that the moves were made to make Kentucky more competitive with their surrounding states. You would cite wish laws were passed in Tennessee and making us less competitive with Tennessee or with Indiana. But now we see surrounding states adopting marijuana laws that are favorable to patients and for recreational users. Ohio, mm-hmm. our northern neighbor here, where we're sitting currently, opening up medical cannabis dispensaries. Other states that border Kentucky, West Virginia, Missouri, Illinois, all have passed variations of laws to legalize medicinal use of marijuana. Other southern states, Florida, Arkansas, Louisiana, have laws. And a little further north, Michigan legalized full recreational use of marijuana. So is there not any concern about Kentucky's competitive position with these other states moving in this direction that now you concede, Representative Mosher, more than half of the states have some type of law related to? Now, Kentucky as a state is not one of them. Are there concerns about Kentucky's competitiveness with this industry trend?
I don't see marijuana as being a revenue generator. We kind of talked about this earlier. So, I do think that we are in a position to really take a look at the other states who have done this and see what's working and what isn't. If we can find a way to tightly regulate it, and if it truly is going to be a medicine, that's very different from legalizing recreationally, in my mind. I think that if you're going to call something a medicine, let it go through the FDA approval process. Otherwise, you're right. I don't think it's going to be any sort of economic boon to our state. And even the states that have legalized it, they're kind of walking back some of their policies, seeing that it costs more to regulate it and enforce, even recreational. And the black market does not go away. So, I don't think that it's any sort of panacea. Even the states that are bringing in millions, they're also spending millions in enforcement and regulation. The other topic that I'd like to discuss on this while we're here is hemp was just legalized on a federal level. And so now we have the opportunity in Kentucky to allow our farmers to have a replacement crop for tobacco or some of these other things. If we are growing hemp and marijuana, it's problematic for farmers. You can't grow them side by side. So, I think we're going to have to make a decision about, are we going to support our agricultural system and allow farmers to have this growing opportunity and, really support what's going on with hemp. And, we can extract CBDs. We can extract medicinal qualities from hemp as well, but also allow research on THC and tightly regulate it, perhaps in universities like Louisiana just did. West Virginia's law only allows edibles or THC in pill form. I think that there are some states that we can look at and learn from.
Well, what do you mean that you can't grow marijuana and hemp side by side? Is that a scientific thing, or
because the THC in marijuana would cross-pollinate with hemp, and it would mess up both crops.
But we do have a pretty large state geographically. I mean, you could grow hemp in some places and marijuana in others.
Well, I mean, just understanding pollination, it's all airborne.
Yeah.
So
actually, if I can speak to that, because that was something that we were, when hemp was first, I think it was before you were in the legislature, when hemp was first introduced to us, that was the concern, this cross-pollination effect. My understanding is that that is not an issue anymore. The hemp plant is so different in how they grow it. It's a thicker stalk. It's used, as for many other purposes. The THC level, there is trace THC in hemp. It's just that it's at a lower level in order to get it passed. They had it they agreed that if it was at a certain level and below, then it would be fine to do that. But there are so many things in that, if I can comment on not just the hemp portion of that. the entire plant, the CBD and the THC together for some illnesses, treating some symptoms of some illnesses, is much stronger than one or the other. So the CBD from hemp, the level of THC is so low that it's not useful to treat some of these where they've done the phase 3 studies, let alone some of the others where they have done other studies, not phase 3. Phase 3, as you know, is I think over 1,000 subjects in your population. In studies where there have been less than that number, it's shown to have a positive effect for folks. They're looking at Parkinson's, they're looking at Alzheimer's was the last that I read. So that one, the cross-pollination is not an issue anymore. Two, I don't see one as if you have hemp that should preclude even from a monetary value, even if people were looking at this saying, hey, we've got a good crop here. We don't want this to be introduced because we're afraid of of losing a certain amount of our profit. Well, number one, that's not capitalism, and that's what we're supposed to all, as Republicans, be for. So, but number two, that the medicinal marijuana is such a small portion of all of this, of the hemp. I mean, of what the CBD from hemp could possibly help to treat, that it's not a threat, should not be considered a threat. The two can coexist and should coexist.
Okay, we've got about 90 seconds left, and I want to make sure I address the future of the legislation that's co-sponsored by Representative St. Onge. Representative Mosher, you're chair now of the House Health and Welfare Committee, and that seems, from a layman's point of view, that health and wellness is where this bill would begin in committee.
Right.
Is it going to begin at your chair? Do you decide what comes forward? Are you going to allow this bill to come in for consideration?
Well, it hasn't been assigned yet, number one. If it came to my committee, I would have these discussions with our committee members and see how they felt about it first. It's difficult to put a bill forward that doesn't have the support. We wouldn't want to do that to the sponsors of the bill. So it's just uncertain as to where the bill is going to be. And if I could just quickly comment on the FDA approval process in response to what you were just saying, the process is working. We have some THC extracted drugs that are being FDA approved. We have Epidiolex for seizures. We have Sativan. We have Marinol. We are seeing that these drugs are being produced. So, the process is working if we just allow it to.
Okay.
And I would say that the sponsors would be very happy to have that bill put forward, and let's see what happens with it, with over 80% of Kentuckians in favor of medicinal marijuana. I think that this is a good thing, and I think we would have positive results if it got to the House floor.
Well, we will wait and we will see and we will follow this along. I want to thank Representative Diane St. Onge of Fort Wright and Representative Kim Mosher of Taylor Mill. Thank you both for taking some time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.